Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, coming off a bye week. Nice little conversation. You had a chance to catch up with Jerry Cutts, get a opinion and information that had not otherwise, I guess, been presented in such a way regarding the Champions Club and what kind of the long view picture of that is and what that has the opportunity to become. So I would encourage people to go back and give that podcast a listen. That was a nice little bi-week product, but we remove ourselves from the bi-week, turn our attention to Clemson, and begin to try to get an idea, try to wrap our head around this game. And we won't do like the exhaustive full preview of the Clemson-Florida State game. We'll save that for Thursday, but we do want to start to ease ourselves into the conversation of that game with a little bit more of the macro ideas surrounding it, and just give people an idea as to what Florida State has to do to make this the competitive game that we've looked forward to since it was put on the schedule in last summer.
Good to be back with you, buddy. Things are about to heat up, and you know how we heat things up with Louisiana Hot Sauce, our title sponsor this year for the Nolcast 2016, perhaps in the future as well. Louisiana Hot Sauce, one drop will do you, but if you want to have a couple, that's great. I know Publix had a great sale on it last week, maybe continuing into this week at some locations. Ingram, you have any new items that you've used Louisiana Hot Sauce on?
Man, I'm not just playing radio when I've used it. Do you know the little hash browns? Probably more appropriately tater tots. I went on a little bit of a tater tot binge last week. And in the pan, rather than just putting some olive oil on the pan, what I ended up doing was putting a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of Louisiana hot sauce in a bowl, tossing the tots in those things, and then throwing them in the oven for 25 minutes or so. It was a really nice product. So I experiment and play with Louisiana's hot sauce on just about everything that I cook right now. And that has been one of the more positive results of late.
That sounds really good. I'm looking forward to having some of that.
Only fitting in a morning recording that we find ourselves talking about breakfast food somehow. But
it does seem to track that pretty well. Like we don't talk a whole lot about eggs and stuff at night, but it really is good on breakfast food, and it's a great sponsor for us here on the Nolcast. By the way, if you all want to find us on Twitter, that's at Nolcast. Email, if you have a longer question for us, that's nolcast@gmail.com. Available on all your fine podcast apps. If you want to find us, iTunes, I believe Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, pretty much everyone out there that I know of. Again, if we get a lot of feedback from y'all as to one we're missing, we'll do our best to add it. And if you have not yet given us a 5-star review on iTunes, let's make sure to do that. We usually say this stuff at the end of the podcast, but today we're switching it up and put it at the beginning.
Well done, Mr. Bud. Well, let's go ahead and move our attention to the game and have, like I said, just a little bit of a 20,000-foot view of the game and get an idea as to what lies ahead this weekend. Want to open the conversation, Bud, with we'll go positive. We'll try to find what we feel Florida State has an advantage and what Florida State has to do to have a one, you know, like a one score ball game with maybe 10 minutes left to play. So we've looked at both teams. This is something that we've kind of had in the back of our mind as we've watched this season play out. And Bud, what are two, maybe three areas that you think Florida State may have a little bit of a competitive advantage over Clemson?
Sure. Well, I think Florida State, their defensive line has legitimately been playing a lot better over the last 2 weeks. Now, you can say that Miami's offensive line is not very good and that Florida State's defensive line kind of feasted on that, and that's true. But they did play very well against Miami, and they obviously played great against Wake Forest, and Wake's offensive line is bad. But at the same time, Clemson's offensive line this year has really not taken the step forward that I think many people thought it would take. Maybe they'll play better against FSU. I imagine they'll come pretty focused. in a rivalry game. But I do think that Florida State's defensive line should have an advantage over Clemson's defensive line. And that is potentially a way that you could beat Clemson. If you're able to get negative plays on early downs, that's where Clemson does a lot of its damage, especially on play action. But if you're able to limit the big plays via play action, and you're able to get some stops and some negative plays, Clemson is not necessarily the best third and long type team. Now, some teams are better at third and long. No team is really great at third and long. That's just not an ideal situation. It's a high leverage situation for the defense. But I think Clemson, if you look at their numbers, they're particularly better when they're not in passing downs, right? Their offense nationally, if you go by the S&P Plus, Bill Connolly's metric, third nationally on standard downs, which are basically where you're at or ahead of the chains, 26th nationally in passing downs. And I think part of that is on passing downs, the threat of Deshaun Watson's legs are somewhat reduced. That, to me, is something that is going to be a major key in this game. And we'll talk about this more on Thursday as well. But, Ingram, do you remember Taj Boyd?
Oh, most certainly.
Do you remember where he got drafted?
I don't remember exactly. No, I don't.
That's because he didn't get drafted. It was a trick question.
That's what I remembered.
So,
spent some time with the Bills. I know it was a UDFA.
So my thing here is that the Bills, or excuse me, that Taj Boyd didn't get drafted out of this offense, despite the fact that he set basically all of Clemson's records. And I think Deshaun Watson is a hell of a lot more talented than Taj Boyd was, and I don't think anybody would really disagree with you there. But at the same time, I think Clemson has been actively limiting how much they run Deshaun Watson this year, probably for a couple reasons. One, because they know that they can. They can win all these games, or most of these games, without having to run him. Two, I think Clemson is somewhat concerned about the way that this system that they run produces quarterbacks for the NFL, because Boyd was so heavily criticized and went completely undrafted, and part of that was physical tools as well. Like, he was a better college player. But I do think that they want to put more throws on tape for Watson in many of these games as opposed to running him. And so they have not been using him on design runs as much. A large part of that's probably also that they want to keep him healthy, right? I mean, you don't need to necessarily do that against Wake Forest. If you're Clemson, this team is loaded and really well coached.
And he's a guy with a history of injuries as well, just to reinforce that idea.
Yeah, 100%. So the problem with that for Florida State is that this is one of those games where I think that – have you ever played racing games, on like video games?
It's been a while, but I've certainly engaged in those at some point.
All right, a lot of times they got that turbo button. You know, if you're in that home stretch, you can kind of lean on that turbo button, and all of a sudden your car just gets that big boost of nitrous. I think that is sort of comparable to what Clemson does with Watson. When they needed to run him against Louisville, they ran him a bunch and on design stuff, and it worked. This is a game where if you're Clemson, I think you do run Deshaun Watson a whole lot. And that is one of the reasons why I don't necessarily think that a lot of these Clemson games are all that comparable to what you're going to see from Clemson against Florida State. There's a danger in this if you do that with your offense. Like, hey, if you're not going to be who you're going to be, and you hear a lot of coaches talk about this, you're like, look, that we can't just do it sometimes. Like, if our identity is a team that is based around a mobile quarterback, we're going to use it a lot. Now, Watson may be such a special talent that you go ahead and break that tendency and you just do it sometimes, like I believe Clemson is doing. But I do think that is an element that you haven't seen from him as much this year, that there's a good chance that will come back out in this game, and especially if Florida State's defensive line is as aggressive as it's been in recent games.
Anywhere else that you see a particular advantage for Florida State?
Yeah. Clemson's defense has really not allowed a whole lot of explosive passes, but they have at times allowed some explosive runs, which has been interesting to me. A decent portion of those were obviously in the Louisville game. That's to be expected when you're facing Lamar Jackson. But they've also allowed some explosive runs to others. Not sure how much of that is mental focus or how much of that is technique. But the problem is Florida State has not done a good job creating explosive runs. They've been extremely efficient in their run game. They pick up third downs with the run very often. But they've not really created explosive plays. But if the trend holds for Clemson's defense, I do think there's a good chance that Florida State can pop some if Florida State can create those type runs, because Clemson has been allowing long runs for a lot of the year.
Yeah, that was surprising to me when we first sat down and started to review this. Clemson's strength and doesn't take a whole lot of time spent on their roster or time spent on their tape to figure this out. I mean, their defensive line is as good as any unit as you're going to find in the country. I would say that there's been situations where Florida State has been particularly close to having a long explosive run. First play in the Miami game comes to mind immediately. Decent amount of times where you've had an 8-yard gain that could have possibly turned into 35 yards plus, and just you've either been brought down by a shoestring tackle or made the wrong cut. If Florida State has a chance to be competitive in this game, and it is able to at times find enough room with Clemson's front four to even present Dalvin Cook, Patrick, whoever it may be, with an opportunity, you can't have like what could be a 30-yard run be limited to an 8 or a 9-yard run here. It's really imperative, I think, that Florida State be explosive, but particularly be explosive in the run game if you're going to have any chance at all. You need to take your chances when you have them. You need to have explosive plays. You also need to try to find some type of identity on offense. And if that is that you can lean on your run game a little bit in this game, that is one way in which I can see us looking at maybe a 4-point game coming down to the final couple possessions for both team in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You also need to start better. That's
that almost goes without saying, but I completely agree with you. Yeah.
I mean, that's
you need to score a touchdown in the first quarter. I mean, flat out, that crap has got to end. Zero touchdowns so far against Power Five teams, something we've talked about for a while, something that a lot of people have discussed.
Four first half touchdowns, I believe, against Power Five teams. That's not going to work.
This game will be over, I think, after the first quarter if you haven't. I don't want to say if you haven't scored a touchdown, but if you haven't at least had multiple drives where you've had some control of the ball and you've come away with points, I don't want to get into a field goal kicking. I don't want to encourage that any more than maybe the head coach has a tendency to do already. But if you come up with a bunch of empty offensive possessions here, this game is not going to wait around and wait on your offense to find itself at all. This is not a game to try to turn some switch in the second half on.
Also, I mean, look, I think Fisher overall is a great coach, but that does not mean that he's immune from criticism. And one of the areas of criticism is that he is far too conservative in settling for field goals and does not value field position and does not value possession of the football. That's evident in how many field goals they try to kick, especially in the red zone. He has said that they've actually moved the ball in the first half this year. That was not true against Wake Forest. I think in some games he's been right in the first quarter, but they've not punched it in. And a lot of times in the second quarter, as far as moving the football, has actually been their worst of the season. So they really have to play a lot better in the first half. Jimbo Fisher is not a good coach as an underdog. His record as an underdog, I think, is under 30%? So that's not very good. We'll see if he can pull this upset. I know you had a question in here about this betting line.
Yeah, something that and you're certainly more versed on this topic than I am, and have a better idea as to it, but still caught my attention to see this thing open up. I think it opened at 3.5. I might have seen it at 3 in some places. That's, I realize what home field advantage means. I realize the inherent amount of talent that exists on Florida State's roster. That was still a number that kind of caught my attention and gave some Florida State fans the nice little situation of being able to have an upset victory or bet against their team and make a little bit of money. You know, to some, that's kind of a repulsive idea, but that's an interesting line for those that are familiar with what this rendition of Florida State's been so far in 2016.
Exactly. So the line actually opened, I think, in a couple spaces at 2.5. Now, the key here to remember is this. Early lines have very low bet limits, so you can only get down, you know, maybe $1,000 or maybe at some place like $5,000, but you can't get down, even if you had the money to do it, early in the week, you can't get down 50,000, right, on a, mm-hmm. a line. And the reason they do this is that these casinos, they want to make the best betting number possible. But at the same time, they also want to sort of use the market to set the line, and the line will find its level. So here, what we saw is that a lot of money came in on Clemson early on, as it should have. That was clearly a low line. I think they wanted to test just how much they would get pounded, and it did get pounded. I mean, to the extent that an early line can get pounded, obviously the limits and the dollars are less. It went from 2.5 to 3.5 in the blink of an eye. It's now at 4.5. I don't know where this is going to settle. I don't think it'll get up to 7 for a couple reasons. One, Florida State's been playing better of late, at least defensively, offensively, not so much. Two, for all the people that took Florida State at 2.5 and 3, if it were to get to 7, you have a really good middle opportunity. Are mm-hmm. you familiar with middling?
Yeah, that I do understand. Gives you a little bit of a chance to create a sweet spot for yourself.
Right, to where, okay, if you're at home, let's say you could take Clemson -3 and Florida State +7. Well, if that number lands on 4, 5, or 6, you have just won both bets. And in that scenario, there is no situation in which you lose both bets, right? Mm-hmm. You have either win, 4, 5, 6, or push win on 3 and 7. So I don't think this will get to 7. What you have to remember is that while Clemson has been a better team than Florida State, they've also screwed around some this year. And I think that is, I don't know, maybe national championship game hangover or whatever. Maybe it's them not running Watson quite as much. They have turned the ball over a lot, although if you go by the numbers, Florida State's actually been a lot luckier on the turnover stuff than Clemson has. Florida State's still a really talented team. And this year it's been a poorly coached team. I think we can both agree on that the coaching staff has not done an acceptable job with this amount of talent and getting them to play to their talent level. But this is a game where you know that Florida State's going to be very motivated. And Vegas is just not going to give you Florida State and like 10 points at home. Like, they're not going to say, hey, yeah, we'll give you this top 10 roster and double digits in mm-hmm. Tallahassee. That's just not going to happen. As it presently stands, 4.5 for Clemson in Tallahassee. You figure 3.5 points for home field advantage. Doak is a good home field advantage. It's not the best. I don't think it's like a top, certainly not a top 5. It's probably in that top 15 range. 3.5 plus 4.5, so 3.5 for the home field advantage, 4.5 for the current line. That basically implies that Clemson is between 7 to 10 points, you know, 8 points better on a neutral site. I think that's probably fair. If I had to take a side on this, I would still take Clemson. I don't want Florida State in less than a touchdown in this game. Because Clemson has shown that they can get to a higher level right, that Florida State has really not shown, despite the fact that Clemson has not consistently played at the high level. At least they've shown that they can do it. Florida State, not so much.
It's a good overview of that. It's something that, you know, we'll continue to watch and have an update on Thursday as far as what the line has done. Yeah, you're right. I saw three. I guess 2.5 was out there for fleeting like opportunity. But yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that is a that's certainly an interesting opening line, and again, something we'll continue to watch and we'll kind of circle back, revisit later on in the week. All right, bud, good discussion there as far as what the betting line might be. And before we get into defensive philosophy too much, want to have a discussion as to what one of our stronger assets has always been, and that is Madison Social, the For the Table West Restaurant Group, and a new offering that they have and what they've brought to the culinary scene of Tallahassee. Yet another really strong addition. That is the Centrale Italian Parlor. That is, it's very similar to Madso in that it's kind of a upscale food, but in a relaxed environment. It's not, you know, it's not someplace that you need to be intimidated in walking in or concerned that you're, you know, not going to be able to pronounce words on the menu. They've done a great job of kind of simplification of a really, you know, a really great food group of Italian meat, cheese, just the simplistic basics of what it is, one of the favorite food genres that exists for many people. It's like a sophisticated but simple, maybe that's a description I would use. And it's something that I would encourage everybody to try out. Perhaps one thing, and this is on us, that we didn't do a good enough job is to tell people exactly where it is. It's right next to Madison Social. Its physical location is 815 West Madison Street. It is located literally next door. It is very much part of the College Town Project, and it is worth your time if you're in the area. And it's something that perhaps we'll be able to give some gift certificates or gift cards and allow our audience to sample one of the better offerings that Tallahassee has brought to the food scene recently.
Dude, I'm excited about it. It's a really cool new concept, and also excited about Madison Social. Tell you what, Saturday, great chance. Booster lots open at noon. Woo. Before you head in there. You could head to Madison Social for a Nolcast Bloody Mary. That is their house Bloody Mary with a big slider on top and a couple dashes of Louisiana hot sauce. Get that sponsor synergy going on there, and very excited about that as well. It's going to be a great day in Tallahassee. Should be awesome weather. Hopefully don't get any rain. Don't think we will. And this is why you root, right? This is why you go to the games. You don't go for the Charleston Southern. You go because of games like this, and thanks to great sponsors like Madison Social, we can talk about this.
But one of the larger discussions that has surrounded Florida State in general this year has obviously been the play of the defense, and the defense has begun to play better over the past 2 weeks. A lot of that has been perhaps a byproduct of the offenses that they've played, and a lot of it has probably been a byproduct of a more kind of simplistic scheme that they've been able to implement. I don't want to put you words in your mouth, but I think you and I both have a fairly large concern if Florida State is to continue with a predominantly man, almost exclusively man-based scheme against Clemson, and what that potentially opens them up, particularly allowing a quarterback run and just all the byproducts of going exclusively man. A little bit of a conundrum here, as you have a roster that appears to embrace man, appears to feel more confident playing man against maybe a overall macro wish of the coaching staff to have a more zone-based philosophy. So in your opinion, what do you think you see from Florida State? And is this something that they're really going to continue on with a predominantly man-based scheme against an offense, both with the philosophy and the talent that Clemson has?
Well, I think that you can play man against Clemson. I don't want to make it sound like you can't. It's somewhat high risk. You have got to get pressure on Watson if you're going to do that, obviously. And you probably need to play a spy of some sort, or maybe you'll play, you know, two man under and rely on your safeties to help out more there and hit him when he runs. That's a lot easier said than done. The main thing is that if you don't play zone well enough to at least present some zone defense to Clemson, like if you're so predictable that you're going to be playing man every down or at the vast majority of downs, Clemson will eat you alive. They're good enough to do that. Florida State so far this year has not shown they can play competent zone defense, which is why I think that you probably need to make a change on the coaching staff, because that's unacceptable to not be able to play even competent zone defense this year. That's really an indictment of this coaching staff, not to get the buy-in from the players, not to get them to play as a team. Jimbo Fisher can prattle on about entitlement all he wants, but that's ultimately on his coaching staff, and they have not done that job. If they have not got this issue fixed over the last 2 weeks, so the bye week and this week, then I don't think this game will be all that close. They have got to be able to play at least some zone defense. Now, how they play the zone defense will be interesting. I don't think that they've done a good job of teaching the pattern match this year. It's clear from all the busts that the kids don't fully understand what's going on. Maybe their install was too fast. I know we heard that from some sources that maybe some of the kids weren't getting it, and then they were moving on to other concepts that sort of required those building blocks to be in place when, in fact, that foundation was rather shaky. So maybe you play more spot drop stuff, which is a lot more simplistic, and it's easier for a defense to face, obviously, because you're not necessarily dropping in conjunction and attempting to match the routes of Clemson. You're basically dropping to spots. Deshaun Watson is a good enough passer to beat that, I think. But you at least have to do it some so that they're not constantly there are route combinations that are man beaters, and there are route combinations that are zone beaters. So if Clemson always knows to call their man beater, then they're going to pick you apart. You've got to be able to sort of throw scissors when they throw paper at times, right? You need to be able to get some of those just sort of, you know, coin flip type wins there. I think that'll be really important to be able to do. But I do think they're going to try to play a decent amount of man coverage. Ingram, you know, one thing that I think that they could actually do fairly well with the man coverage is this. I looked at some more stats here. You know that Clemson on passing downs, this is interesting to me. They're 26th nationally in S&P on passing downs, which is pretty good. I mean, not amazing. But you realize that they are within that. They basically throw at the sticks all the time. Like, they're really good at getting the first down on third and long, but they have not created explosive plays well at all on those passing down situations. They're 104th nationally in that. And so what that tells me is that there's either a lack of success by Clemson in, like, throwing very deep on, let's say, third and eight. Like, they don't try to take the bomb shot on third and eight. Or they just don't want to try it. If you want to play man coverage on third down and long and bring pressure at Watson, I think that could work, especially because their lack of success and their lack of willingness seemingly to do that.
It's been interesting. This was a team coming into this year that a lot of people in college football, particularly the Clemson fan base, they thought this was going to be one of the more explosive offenses that we've seen in recent history. It certainly was not that coming out of the gates. It has somewhat found its footing over the past 2 weeks or so. 3 weeks, but it's never been the offense perhaps that people projected it to coming into the year. It's been efficient enough. It's like you said, they've run Watson when they needed to. I personally watched them play against a pretty lackluster foe in Georgia Tech a couple weeks ago. And again, the offense was fairly pedestrian. So it will be interesting to see what they look like on Saturday night and how much of that is just them kind of, I don't know if sleepwalking is the right term, but just having a hard time really finding the motivation and some of the national game, the national title game hangover, if such a thing exists. But when you look at the roster, particularly when you look at obviously what they have at quarterback, Gallman is a really good college football running back. But really, when you look at what they have at receiver, this should be one of the better offenses that Florida State will face over the period of three or four seasons. But it's never really come together like that. And if you're right, if Florida State's able to put them into third and long, is not good for any offense, obviously very much at a disadvantage when you're in a situation like that. But that is a place where maybe a little bit more of a man-based scheme would favor Florida State and would allow them to do some things that Clemson hasn't been particularly good at over the course of the year.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to force them to play left-handed a little bit. And so far this year, Clemson has not been able to overcome that at times. And their answer typically is to run Watson. And I think that they will do that in this game, which is why I'm picking Clemson. Florida State has not done a good job stopping mobile quarterbacks this year. I don't think their defensive issues are fixed in large part. I think that they are playing with better effort, better intensity on a down and down basis, but that's not going to fix everything.
But as we kind of engage in our mini macro preview of the Clemson game, just wanted to spend a couple minutes and touch on the emergence of the Florida State-Clemson rivalry. Obviously, it's been a meaningful game at times. Since Florida State joined the league, you remember the game that they had up there in 99 after the whole Dillard's fiasco where Peter Warrick, I think, missed the first half. That was one of the more competitive games that team faced all year. Clemson's always been a nice program with a good amount of history, but it's really been the past 5-7 years under Dabo Swinney that they've emerged as really the preeminent threat to Florida State in the conference when you judge both programs by what they can do at full efficiency. I'm not judging Florida State based off its 2008 output, and would not judge Clemson in some of the Bowden years either. But this has undoubtedly turned into Florida State's most important conference game, and a large argument can be made that perhaps this is the most talented rivalry when you judge the talent the two rosters have when they come together, even more so than Florida and Miami over the past 5 years or so. So this is something that we've talked about since the inception of this podcast. It's something that's been pretty evident when you look at recruiting trends, but this is very much kind of the game of the conference, and it's become it's become the largest test of Florida State's roster compared to another one when you look at the comparative rosters over the last 5 years.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think it's been a huge rivalry game for Florida State. It's been a needed rivalry game with Miami being so down. Florida State's played down to Miami's level several times over the past few years, but it's also kind of played up when it played Clemson to the extent that you can play up if you're Florida State. I mean, you have more talent than most everybody. It's been a huge game. I think that there is a time in the future where you could potentially see it becoming Florida State's number two rival. Now, I don't think it's there yet. I do think it's a more important game than Miami, at least now. Now, this year, obviously not, because Florida State's already, their season to me is already they've already failed to reach their goals by virtue of choking that game away against North Carolina at home and getting blown out by Louisville. But it's a very important game. I mean, Clemson is to use their term, all in, and one of the few FSU opponents who is truly all in about football. Like, they go all out in recruiting. Their facilities are ridiculous. It's a measuring stick game for Florida State. And, you know, last year they go up there. I think Florida State was very lucky to have that game be as close as it was. I don't buy that they were just a couple breaks away from winning. I think that game was much closer to being a blowout than it was an FSU win. But this year they've got a shot to right things at home. I think it could definitely help to put a more positive framing on this season. And it's a really important annual game. I mean, if you don't win this game, it's very hard to see a path to the college football playoff. And Florida State and Clemson compete for a couple of recruits every year, certainly. And they've done a good job of beating FSU, specifically Lawrence Dawsey, the receivers coach, not a great recruiter down there in Tampa. And they do a really good job in Georgia as well, and in the Carolinas. That's a very talented program and a great break program to be facing. I mean, that's kind of why you play the game. You want to play the best of the best.
Very much so. I think, not to use this as an opportunity to remind people that Florida or that Miami has now lost three consecutive games in a row, but really, I think the emergence of this game and really the emergence to an extent of Clemson in the ACC is, as much as it's tied to any school, it's tied to Miami. Clemson has emerged as the second recruiting power in this conference, has done so for 7 years or so, and you just referenced it. When you want to look at Clemson's roster, go and just look at the kids out of the Tampa area in general that they've been able to go down and get. They recruit exceptionally well there, but really they do good enough in the state of Florida and take a lot of kids that obviously Florida State would want, but a lot of kids that Miami would want and really never even had a chance at, just because they want to play college ball at the highest level, and Clemson's a great option to do that. So Clemson has very much kind of emerged, found its footing in the state of Florida, is good enough to come down and get enough kids a year to be able to supplement their skill positions. Wide receiver and running back is particularly an area that's representative of talent that they've mined out of the state of Florida. And it is a storyline that's not going anywhere, and it's something that we'll continue to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now Clemson has a better recruiting staff than Florida State does, and they're currently actually out-recruiting Florida State this year. So that's concerning for FSU, considering that Jimbo Fisher's staff has lost to Clemson before when Clemson was not out-recruiting him.
But I say that's probably as natural a tie-in to anything as to us to move into a little bit of a recruiting update as to how we will end this podcast. Not only do I want to discuss the visitors for the Clemson game, but just have a brief kind of 5-minute overview with where Florida State stands in recruiting. Want to maybe begin the conversation with the kids that are coming for this game, what that visitor, at least the initial visitor list, may look like, and we'll move into one or two other recruiting topics.
Yeah, got a bunch of talent coming in. This is the biggest home game of the year for Florida State, especially for recruiting purposes. You got the dudes coming out of Episcopal High School there, outside of Houston, in Walker Little, who is arguably the number one offensive tackle in the country, and his teammate Marvin Wilson, who is, I think, the best defensive tackle in the country, although I don't think this is a great year for defensive tackles. I know Charles Strong, Florida State's 2018 commit, at running back out of Union County, is going to be in. Believe Walter Grant is supposed to be in, the linebacker there out of Georgia. Don't think Florida State has a great shot with him, but I guess we'll have to see. They do need some linebackers. Willie Gay, obviously the linebacker out of Starkville, Mississippi, who was an Ole Miss commit, decommitted from the Rebels, and now is strongly considering Michigan, who I believe he named his number one school after visiting up there. Also looking at Mississippi State, Florida State, and Florida, that would be a big-time get. He physically is ready to play right away. Mentally, I guess we'll have to see how well he picks up the game. And Florida State is in an interesting spot, I think, with its linebacker situation, right? Because I'm going to argue that their linebacker roster is probably better than it's been in recent years, you know? But yet it's still not ideal. And if you go through it, you have Matthew Thomas and Roderick Hoskins, who are both, I believe, juniors. Those guys, you assume, will be back next year. Maybe the Thomas assumption is a poor assumption because he's already been academically ineligible one year. And we know that if you know, as you matriculate to school, the classes don't get easier, they get harder. So maybe he's a guy who would go pro to, you know, if he had like another ineligibility situation coming up. I don't know. That's just speculation. Certainly, I thought that if he was going to have a better year, that he would be gone, but he really has not played all that well. Delvin Purifoy, redshirt sophomore, has never recovered from his ankle injury. He's a player who I think if he was at a different school, would have already been medically disqualified. But Florida State doesn't seem to sort of shed dead weight on the roster. Shamar Kilby Land, another sophomore who was academically ineligible this year. Assuming he can make it back, I think he could still be a good player for you. And then you have Dontavius Jackson, Emmett Rice, and Josh Brown as sophomores, who I all think are promising players. Florida State also has DeMarco Artis committed as a high schooler. So I do think that their young guys are in a better spot than they were previously, especially because you're going to have some nice competition there next year. But they really could use some more linebackers in this class. I think that's a spot where you may want to end up taking three. So if they can get a Walter Grant or a Willie Gay, I know Baron Browning's coming in for an official visit. I don't expect Florida State to gain much traction with him. They've really not had a good year. This is the second year in a row where Florida State is not playing like a top 10 team. I think that resonates with commits. I mean, there's not a whole lot of excitement. Jeffrey Okuda's coming in on his official, also another Texas kid. Again, I think he's all Ohio State at this point. 2018 name to know, Nadav Joseph out of Miami Edison, who I know likes Florida State a whole lot. He's an LSU commit, defensive back. They could actually flip him, in my opinion. Cam Akers, your running back, obviously out of Mississippi, still considering a whole lot of schools. Was supposed to take an official visit last week, or at least a visit over to Alabama, but he told SEC Country that I think the travel was kind of wearing on. I do think he'll make it down to the FSU game. That's an elite running back right there who could come in and get starters reps for Florida State immediately as a true freshman, assuming that Dalvin Cook goes pro, which I think is a pretty safe assumption. It's a very good list of kids they have coming in. Now, one spot where they really do need help at is defensive end. Jordan Wright, a kid out of South Florida that they've offered in the last couple months, is also coming in. Got to see what happens with him. I think he's been having a nice senior season. I'll be on the lookout to see if there's more defensive end names coming in because they lose to Marcus Walker. Jacob Hughes is going to be a senior. You know, Josh Sweat's going to be a junior. I still think there's a good chance he goes pro early. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're going to get out of Jalen Wilkerson or Janarius Robinson. Obviously, I like Brian Burns a whole lot, but that's a spot where they need to hit on some dudes. And you know, maybe we talk about changes needed to the coaching staff, and I certainly think that they do need to shake some things up. And I think it's very important that people don't get fooled with this idea that the defense is improving that much. You have to also consider the quality of offenses faced. And in that regard, they really have not been facing good ones the last 2 weeks. But you also have to look at recruiting. I mean, this is a school that has, when it's been good under Jimbo Fisher, it's been because of the elite level recruiting. And this year, I don't know if they're going to have a top five finish. And that's a slip. That's evidence of them backsliding a little bit. Right now, they are, what are they, eighth? Yeah, eighth nationally. Now, their average is strong. I mean, they got eight blue chips and 6-9, which is, you know, 4 and 5 stars as opposed to 2 and 3 stars. But they don't really measure up to what Ohio State and Alabama are doing, which isn't new. They've been heavily out-recruited by those schools over the last 4 years. But, you know, Georgia has 6 4- and 5-stars and just 3 3-stars. LSU, 11-7. Georgia, 11-3. Oklahoma, 15-6. Florida State, 8-6 is not necessarily the best ratio, and they really do need to step things up on the recruiting trail.
Well, a solid atmosphere will almost be guaranteed. Any type of result you would think on Saturday would go a long way, at least perhaps to impress the people that you mentioned that that will be there, and we'll have a more exhaustive list later on this week when we have a little bit better idea as to who will be traveling to Tallahassee for the weekend. But it is undoubtedly the largest game as far as who they host, the type of talent that they've tried to book to get in here this weekend. It's a Saturday night game. It's not maybe quite the clash that we would have predicted when we first looked at the schedule and we thought that you might see two undefeated teams. Worst case scenario, you might see a team come in with a loss. Florida State obviously has lost two at this point. Like you mentioned, some of their more important goals have been rendered obsolete or unable to attain. But still, an important game for the program, an important game for recruiting some of the visitors that you have that you referenced. And it is something that we'll watch, and obviously recruiting is something that makes up a large part of this podcast historically, and something that I think we've done a good job on. It's not going anywhere. It's a conversation that we'll continue to have and monitor, but it would be a great shot in the arm for your recruiting efforts to have a positive result on Saturday night. And that is one of the more obvious and kind of things that perhaps could have gone unspoken.
Yeah. Let's
not get blown out at home. Yeah. That would not booster your recruiting efforts by any means.
No, certainly not. We are at the 45 minutes, exactly what we planned. So I guess we will chat with y'all on Thursday.
But Thursday it'll be. Appreciate the listens that we continue to receive here. Very much appreciate the feedback that we have received from you guys over the past 2 weeks or so. Whether that be good or bad, all is appreciated. And the amount of social interaction, particularly with Louisiana Hot Sauce, has been rather impressive. And we just want to thank you guys for what you've been able to allow us to do. And the consistency of product that we're able to bring to you is very much a reflection of the audience that we have. So, as always, appreciate your guys' time. We look forward to talking to you later on with a more extensive preview of Florida State.
Yeah. I see you, big bro. I'ma kill these niggas, man. Yeah. Straight off the block with it. Eagle Street, to be specific. I'm peeping at you, peeping different. I pay my dues, you keep the difference. I can see the end in the beginning, so I'm not racing, I'm just sprinting. Cause I don't wanna finish, they diminish, I replenish. Scientific, I'm out this world. I wear bright red, like a girl told. No, no, fingernails dirty. I've been counting dirty money since 12:30. 8 a.m. weigh them. If they short, take them right back and spray him. Amen. Yeah, I just do my wing. And every time I do it, I do my thing. Yeah, believe that. Like a true story. Rims big, make the car look like it's 2 stories. If I hop out, that'd be suicide. No back seats, call that paralyzed. I don't have a spine. I don't fantasize, I mastermind, then go after mine. You see, I handle mine.